you know, it is really the whole of the two chapters that I'm going to be talking about tonight. But I'm just going to read from Exodus chapter 3, verse 10, through to the beginning of chapter 4. So obviously we've had Moses at the burning bush and everything, and God is about to commission him to go and lead the people out of Egypt. So verse 10 says, "So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain." Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites: 'I am has sent me to you.'" Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'?" Then the Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" "A staff," he replied. The Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. "This," said the Lord, "is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." Okay, so we're looking at questions that God asks us. And in this passage, we see that God is commissioning Moses to go to Pharaoh in order to bring God's people out of slavery in Egypt. And we see that Moses encounters God in a new way. As he sees that burning bush, he goes to investigate further. We see the way that God reveals himself afresh to Moses. From this point onwards, we've got a new name for God in the Bible: I am who I am, Yahweh. You know, probably the most famous of all God's names. And we see the conversation between God and Moses. Moses argues with God. Essentially, he comes up with all kinds of reasons and excuses why he shouldn't do what God has asked him to. And I really like these two chapters because we see the way that God and Moses engage in conversation. Moses asks a lot of questions. He takes a lot of convincing. And it's relatively late in this dialogue, that at the beginning of Exodus chapter 4, that God asks this question that we're going to look at tonight: "What is that in your hand?" And I've been saying all along in this series that questions and answers are part of the conversations that make up relationships. All relationships need communication to flourish. I read a series of novels by Karen Slaughter, and they feature a character called Will Trent. He works in law enforcement. And Will Trent is very, very badly dyslexic, and he's also on the ADSD spectrum. He's quite autistic in some ways. He's had a troubled childhood in foster care, and he struggles with everyday relationships. You could say that he thinks too much. Every conversation that he has with friends, with colleagues, with suspects, with criminals even, is analysed to within an inch of its life. And I find these novels quite interesting because of the skill of the author in taking you into the mind of a character who may perhaps not think the way that we think. We can learn compassion and understanding about human differences that way. You know, Will can be thrown into turmoil by any comment. He doesn't understand, perhaps, the cues that other people take for granted in relationships and in communication. So sarcasm or joking or flippancy or deception. How do you work out what's going on in a world where other people don't think the way that you do? And he's got a lot to learn about conversation and communication in relationships. But I think, you know, in all honesty, all of us do, don't we? We all need to learn about conversation and communication. Because the only way that relationships thrive is through honest communication. And that can be very difficult. And in this encounter between God and Moses, we've got a lot of honest communication. You know, God reveals who he is to Moses. "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." He talks about his purposes. I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians, to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. He gives Moses the commission that I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring the people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. And you know, in an ideal world, that would be the end of the story. Yeah, you know, God's told Moses to go, Moses goes, end of story. But of course, Moses is full of doubt and insecurity, just as we are. And he asks God three questions. In Exodus 3, verse 11, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? In verse 13, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? And in verse 14, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? So that first question, who am I? You know, it addresses his insecurity, his identity. You know, Moses was brought up in the household of Pharaoh, thanks to God's miraculous intervention in his early life. And we might expect him to feel confident about this task as a result. But life has thrown Moses a curveball, as the Americans say. 40 years earlier, when perhaps he did feel confident about his ability and about his purpose in life, he'd killed an Egyptian man for beating a fellow Hebrew. He'd been forced to flee for his life to Midian. And so perhaps he's no longer so sure that, you know, returning to Egypt is a good idea. You know, perhaps going to Pharaoh isn't the best thing. Last time he encountered Pharaoh, the king had wanted to kill him. And so Moses feels insecure, maybe even afraid, and he no longer thinks it's a good idea for God to choose him. And many of us, I think, feel just as insecure and inadequate as Moses. You know, perhaps something's happened in our past that makes us feel disqualified to serve God. Maybe we just don't think we're good enough anyway. You know, our failures, our inadequacies, our personalities can all make us ask this question, who am I? But God's answer is that it's not really about who Moses is, but it's about who God is. You know, it's not about who Moses is, but whose he is. You know, it's not about Moses' identity, it's about God's. I will be with you, God says. And we can be confident not in our skills or our ability or our bravery, not in our expertise or our intelligence. We can be confident just because God is with us. The Lord Almighty has promised never to leave us or forsake us, and so we can go wherever he tells us to go. His next question looks deeper into the question of God's identity and who he is. You know, it's one thing to go to the Israelites and say, well, God's with me, but he anticipates their questions. He assumes that they'll want to know more about this God of their fathers. So he says, what shall I tell them? You know, they will ask Moses for more details, and Moses is not quite sure about his relationship to God. He hasn't got all the answers. He doesn't know how to answer the questions that will surely come. And we can feel like that too. You know, we don't have all the answers to the questions that people ask us about God. Maybe we feel uncertain and sometimes lacking in confidence because of that. But God's answers take us even further and deeper into his heart. I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. Now, I don't think that I would have found that a particularly reassuring answer. But in truth, you know, God can't describe himself in comparison to anyone else. He's so far above all others that he can only speak of who he is in relation to himself. And when God sends us, he gives us hope and confidence that we can't get from any amount of training or studying. It's just from God. His next question, what if they don't believe me? You know, that kind of presupposes that his answers aren't going to be enough to convince the Israelites, let alone Pharaoh. And, you know, we can't really blame him for thinking that way. You know, God speaks to him about his many names, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob has sent me to you. And he gives Moses some quite specific promises and guidance. But Moses isn't convinced. He's still asking, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? You know, I think we spend a lot of time asking God these what-if questions, don't we? Yeah, a lot of time asking him hypothetical questions, hypothetical scenarios, and it really, it's a waste of time. You know, God isn't found in those hypothetical scenarios. He knows the end from the beginning. He's never flummoxed by situations the way that we are. And God's compassion and mercy mean, you know, that we can ask those questions and we're not consumed by him when we ask them. God treats Moses' questions seriously. He doesn't dismiss it as irrelevant. He doesn't shout at Moses for asking it. But he uses Moses' question as an object lesson in faith. And he says to him, "What is that in your hand?" "A staff," he replied. The Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand, take it by the tail." So Moses reached out, took hold of the snake. I wouldn't have done that, incidentally. I'd have been running away when it turned into a snake. And it turned back into a staff in his hand. "This," said the Lord, "is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." You know, Moses was struggling to believe that he, this outcast for 40 years, the man who'd been in Midian, you know, been a shepherd, you know, a shepherd of all things, could be used by God to lead God's people out of slavery. You know, it seemed an impossible thing. It was a ludicrous idea to Moses, and he reckoned that if he found it ludicrous, the Israelites and Pharaoh would find it ludicrous too. And, you know, to be fair to Moses, he was probably right in so far as his reasoning went. You know, in as far as when we look at things from a human point of view, he was right. But faith is about more than our human reasoning and our human way of looking at things. God asked Moses what was in his hand. Really ordinary question and a very ordinary answer. You know, Moses was holding a staff because he was a shepherd. He was holding what shepherds use to do their very ordinary jobs. But at God's command, when Moses threw the staff to the ground, it became a snake. When he picked it up again, it turned back into a staff in his hand. God was going to take the ordinary things of Moses' life and use them to demonstrate his miraculous, totally supernatural power to the Israelites and to Pharaoh. He would give the people the signs that they needed to believe that it was God. God would sort it out. And we often don't believe God can use us because, like Moses, we just feel ordinary. We may well feel inadequate, unable to do any miraculous things that God asks of us. We're unable to see that when God calls us to do something, he's the one who supplies the miracles. All he wants from us is our simple trust and obedience. You know, it's very easy for us to focus, as Moses did, on all the reasons why what God has told us to do can't work. But the answer is not to spend all our time on the what ifs and the if onlys, but to understand that the ordinary things of life, when we surrender them to God, can become something amazing. God is the one who steps into our ordinariness to equip us for the extraordinary. He's the one who qualifies us, as Paul reminded the Corinthians. You know, Moses had been carrying that ordinary piece of wood around for many years, and nothing dramatic had ever happened. It was just a piece of wood. But when Moses listens to God and allows God to work through him, the staff became, it says in verse 20 of chapter 4, the staff of God. It became capable of the miraculous. It was that staff that Moses would later use to part the Red Sea. It was that staff that he would use to bring water out of a rock. It was that staff that he would use to defeat enemy armies. There was absolutely nothing special about the staff. What was special was God working through it. And that's true of us. When God says to us, "What is in your hand?" he's essentially asking us to name our ordinariness. Whatever we have that seems so very mundane and inadequate to us. But we've got to understand that if we surrender what is in our hand to God, then miracles can happen. You know, Samson slayed hundreds of Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. Yeah, it wasn't the jawbone itself that was special. What was special, it tells us in Judges 15, verse 14, was the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. And that was what made the difference. David killed Goliath with a slingshot on 5 stones. You know, it wasn't that he was a particularly good shot. He defeated Goliath because of his trust in God. He said to Goliath, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." You know, David used those ordinary things that he had rather than the armor that Saul wanted to give him, but it was God who gave him the victory. That young boy who gave his picnic lunch to Jesus, you know, that lunch fed over 5,000 people. I don't think it was because, you know, he'd got to feed a mum and she'd packed enough food to feed 5,000 people. Yeah? The miracle happened because Jesus, the bread of life, was present and he made that picnic lunch feed so many people. You know, God doesn't necessarily need what is in our hand. You know, he can bring about his will and his victories any way that he chooses. But he asks us that question, what is in your hand, I think, to make us realise that we don't need anything extra to do God's will. We don't need any new special gifting. We don't need to pass an exam or get more money or do something special. We just need to give ourselves wholly to God and realise that he is the one who is going to do the miracles. You know, God called Moses to lead his people out of Egypt. That was something that was way, way beyond Moses' capability. But it wasn't beyond God's. And that ordinary staff of Moses would become something extraordinary when he used it as God commanded. You know, there's a saying, a proverb, that God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. You know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't strive to be qualified. You know, I've spent over 40 years of my life either working for qualifications myself or teaching other people to get qualifications. You know, when my house needed rewiring, I wanted a qualified electrician to do it. When my house needs plumbing, I want a qualified plumber to do it. I don't want my house blowing up or getting flooded by, you know, any old numpty doing it. But in the kingdom of God, we've got to understand that success is linked to faith and to obedience, not simply to skills or ability or effort. It's not down to us and our ability. It's down to God. You know, Paul said to the Corinthians, such confidence we have through Christ before God, not that we are competent in ourselves to claim anything for ourselves, but our competence comes from God. He's made us competent as ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. You know, Paul's success as an apostle wasn't because of his education, his clear-minded thinking, his hard work, even though all of those things were important in shaping who he was. And even though God used everything in his life to help him as an apostle, Paul's real success was because he learned to rely on God and depend entirely on God. And Moses' success in leading Israel out of Egypt wouldn't be because he was the most qualified person to do the job. You know, we can see very clearly in these two chapters that he didn't feel qualified or adequate for the task. He even asked God to send somebody else. That's how bad he felt about it. But the question that God asked him, what is in your hand, took him past his own skills into the realm of submission to God. And it's in that place of submission and surrender to God that success comes. You know, that staff wasn't anything special in itself, but with God, it turned into a snake. It ate other snakes. You know, it brought water out of a rock. It turned water to blood. It probably performed all kinds of miracles that are not recorded because it became this symbol of the power of God. And God's power is available for every single one of us here. Yeah? God's power is there for all of us, not just for the special people, the very good Christians, you know, the noble people. God's power is there for each one of us. You know, we're not supposed to be living for God in our own strength, in our own skills, and in our own effort. We're just called to surrender everything that we've got, everything we are, to God. And then, and only then, will we see those miracles for which we long, because God will be doing the miracles. So what is in your hand tonight, and what can God do with it?